Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to this episode of the Life Hacker Podcast. It is September 5th, and this week we are talking about Android's new KitKat obsession, how to speed up your old iPhone or iPad, and how to turn your phone into the ultimate alarm clock.
We're also answering your questions about hacking Netflix, removing file duplicates, and docking your MacBook without spending a fortune.
And as always, we'll be going through our favorite tips and downloads of the week, so let's hop to it. Hey guys, and welcome to the show. I'm Whitson Gordon.
I'm Adam Dachis.
And with us we have Thorin Klesowski joining us via Google Hangouts from his new apartment.
Hey guys.
Which doesn't have nearly as many funny things on the wall as the last one.
But it has a brick wall. I really like the brick wall. I miss that. I used to have one.
I am very happy to be here doing the podcast today at Dachis's house because Dachis has air conditioning.
Oh, you don't?
And I don't know, Dachis and I live in LA, and by my educated guess, it is somewhere between 90 and 90 million bajillion degrees outside, Fahrenheit. So
it didn't feel that hot out this morning.
I'm really happy to be in a house that has central air. I have air conditioning, but it doesn't work very well.
Well, so what do you have? Do you have one of those windowless things? Is it?
It's kind of like a window
evaporator.
It's like a wall-mounted air conditioner.
Oh, it's like a Mr. Slim.
Yeah, and so it works
I like
really
those.
Well.
Those usually work really. Yeah, for one room.
Yeah, in the one room, and then the rest of the apartment is still really hot.
Oh well, you could get a window thing and stick it somewhere else. I mean,
yeah,
those are
perhaps.
Pretty. It's like $150, and they're pretty.
We have weird
decent.
Windows. Anyway, I was just saying, I was very happy to be here.
You know, well, there's this DIY air conditioner post I read on Lifehacker a few years
That's
ago.
That's true. We've done a bunch of those. Actually, that is kind of relevant. I should have thought to mention that in the podcast today because there's just, I don't know what it's like elsewhere in the country. Thorin, are you guys having like a heat wave up in Seattle?
No, it's like 65 degrees. Kind
well,
of
it's beautiful
I hate
for that.
You.
This is why I like going up to Seattle this time of year.
Well, anyway, for those of you that are stuck in a heat wave this week, well, I'll put this link in the show notes. There are some interesting DIY
bowl
air conditioner
ice,
alternatives.
Bowl of ice with a fan is the best.
Yeah?
It doesn't work when... I was just in San Diego this last weekend, and we got an Airbnb apartment. Apparently, this is not my lucky streak right now with them. but they're like it said air conditioned, and we explicitly picked that one over another one for more money because it was air conditioned. And the air conditioner was one of those windowless units, and it was only 5,000 BTU, which is not a very powerful one, if you're familiar with that number. And it couldn't even air condition the room because it was so hot. It was 98 degrees and humid in the apartment. It was colder outside. We thought about sleeping outside one night.
That's horrible.
Yeah, so it's just, you know, a bowl of ice and a fan. Well, there wasn't a fan, so that was part of the problem.
But fan goes a long way.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is I have gone
really well.
All summer without ever even plugging in my air conditioner because with the right windows open and a fan, that goes a long way, even in Southern California.
Oh, for sure, yeah. And in Minnesota, when I visit my
in
family...
In Minnesota, it wouldn't be as easy, probably, because it's so freaking humid.
Yeah, but I mean, like, okay, so my parents' house, completely air-conditioned, except for the closet, literally a closet that I sleep in. I mean, it's a large closet, and it fits a twin bed, but that's about it. Like, there's a little room to walk around the bed. It's in my old room, which is now my dad's office. We have a guest room, but my sister gets it because.
So you actually like that stereotypical thing where like the child moves out and the parents turn it into an office or
yeah.
a gym? Like that actually happened to you?
Yeah, but we already had a gym in the basement because my dad's an exercise freak, and then also my dad cried when he made the office because he's like, oh no, it's my child's room and no more, and so it makes me feel a little bit better about it. And I was like, Dad, get over it. So. The only thing that sucks is that it's hot in there, but I've thanks to Lifehacker, I've been able to overcome
thanks,
that
Lifehacker.
Problem.
Lifehacker. Well, anyway, so there's that. That'll be our first item of news today.
Yeah.
Five DIY alternatives to air conditioning. All right, let's move on to the next news story, the second news story of the week. And this was a very big controversy, and I can see why, because it's so important to the world of tech. And that is that Google announced the newest version of Android 4.3 will be coming out at some point in the near future, and it will be called KitKat.
Oh my god.
Oh my gosh, they didn't name it after some generic dessert and named it after a candy bar instead? I am outraged. Actually, I do not give... I give zero swear words that I can't say. I can't. People went so crazy about this, and I literally could not care less.
Yeah.
Do you guys think that this is at all any sort of negative choice on Google's part? Can we just?
Well, I think there are a lot of like nice break me off a piece of that jokes that can go out there. So I don't see the downside. Really,
I don't think any. I think Google confirmed that no money exchanged hands. Supposedly, that it wasn't like an advertising thing. And Gina Trapani, the founding editor of Lifehacker, made some interesting points that like it's actually kind of a more fun and whimsical name than the generic desserts, and it's a little bit less U.S. centric, I think, because it's not like a you know, it's like key lime pie, which is what it was originally going to be named. I don't know. Anyway, I honestly have already talked about this for too long, and I am ashamed of myself. So let's move on to the next news story.
All right.
The main thing is that we don't know what is in this version of Android yet, but they're going to tell us sometime soon.
Okay.
That's actually the important
thing. What about Android 5, though? What happened to that?
I have no idea. Apparently, they're calling it 4.3.
I want to know what 5 is. I feel like they've really postponed that in, not literally speaking, postponed it, but it's taking a long time.
Yeah, I don't really know. But the other thing is, and I think we may have talked about this on the show a little bit.
Eric's point.
Yeah, this was Eric's big thing, and Ars Technica actually posted
a really
long article about this week, and I was like, Eric and I were talking about this 1 month ago. Mm-hmm. Is that the, you know, Google, in order to solve the fragmentation problem, they're not putting all of those new Android features into new versions of Android. They're pushing them out through Google Play services or through separate apps. So instead of, you know, some phones being running 4.3 and some on 4.2 and some people are missing all of these features, you're just going to get it all through the Play Store as kind of like an app. Or as like new little feature updates that come to your existing version of Android, which solves the problem of going through the carriers and the manufacturers and all that noise. So I'm not too worried about the version numbers anymore. Also, version numbers never meant anything in the world ever.
Yeah.
Except maybe in like the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah, now it's just so unbelievably arbitrary, I just feel like there hasn't been a big release, and I just kind of want that from Google. I think what they're doing is right, but I just want them to kick
you
Apple.
You
want to
feel like they're still really doing something and pushing out new exciting features.
Yeah, it's just because Apple's basically doing it. I feel like iOS 7, if you don't count the redesign part of it, which I would love to not.
But the redesign
count
is one of the biggest parts of it. That's like it's the biggest overhaul iOS has ever made to its. System.
Yeah, but it's also not great.
And Google's
it's
doing the opposite of that.
Yeah, but if you don't count that as a feature, because I really don't think it adds anything of benefit for the most part.
Agreed.
Then what you end up with is kind of a iOS 4, or what are we on, 6.5 release. There's not a whole lot going on.
We could talk about this forever, but I just want to say I think that we've kind of reached a point in a lot of cases where. We, you know, they've kind of been honing and perfecting these operating systems over time, and while they could do a lot more, I think a lot of the stuff that I want from them isn't a bunch of big new features. You know, I don't really want things like, oh, being able to unlock my phone with a fingerprint or like whatever the heck it is.
So
I think the
useless.
Main thing that they need to be doing is making them faster and more efficient.
Click and swipe it. I feel like I'm doing something fancy.
Yeah. I'm not too worried about them not having really big updates with a ton of new features because I feel like I get a lot of what I want out of my phone now.
Yeah.
And I think I'd rather them be kind of perfecting little things here and there rather than you know, releasing a bunch of crap that I don't want.
Yeah, I think on Google's side, they need to make experiences a bit better. I like that they did that with Google Maps. Remember, I was complaining about how I liked the iOS version better than the Android version. Well, now they're equal.
Yeah,
And they're in one spot, and it just is more seamless, I think. And then in terms of Apple, they really need to, I think, release features that normal people still want. Like setting a different default app.
Oh my god, that's like the one thing
I'll never
wants
get over
iOS
that.
Anymore. The thing Google really needs to work on is battery life optimization. That's like, should be their number one.
But it's gotten so much better.
Has it really?
Well, with those, you just keep hearing about, I mean, I don't know from experience.
I assume that the phones just are getting bigger and bigger batteries.
Well, they are.
That's why they're huge.
But they're still like, it's still 2,300 milliamps. So it's not like it's a huge jump. I mean, that's what the next iPhone's going to have too. And the processor is a bit slower. And it seems like HTC especially has made a big leap in managing the battery life. I think the S4 is supposed to be quite good too.
Okay, maybe it's just because I'm on an old phone. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not that old. These just came out.
Yeah.
But that's what everyone's been saying anyway. I don't know how accurate it is.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Thorne, what do you want from Apple? Or I guess Google if it matters.
Yeah, I think also battery management is really all I care about. I don't care about any of the features. iOS 7's nice, I guess, but there's nothing in it that I would run out to get, really.
Do you get bad battery life on your iPhone, though?
Yeah, mine's had horrible battery life.
Do you have
it's just dying slowly.
Well, you have a 3GS, right?
No, I have a 4.
I was going to say, you have a 3GS? My 4 got insanely awesome battery life, even 2 years later.
Mine did, now it doesn't. I think it's all planned obsolescence. It's all against me somehow.
Must be. All right, let's move on to our last news story because we spent too long talking about that.
Yeah.
Evernote for Windows updated this week. So those of you that have been using or are familiar with Evernote for Mac, they updated to version 5 a few months ago. And they kind of really overhauled the interface, made it much cleaner and less looking like garbage. And a lot of people were kind of mad when that change happened because I think they got rid of a lot of features.
Well, they hid a bunch of stuff that was so easy to find before, and it still frustrates me, and I wish they would just kind of compromise. It wouldn't be that hard. But once you know where it is, it's
so they finally made that update to the Windows version, and it actually looks very nice, and it feels much nicer. It feels much more like a well-developed app than the old one did. I haven't played with it a ton. It doesn't look like I've lost a lot of the features that I want. I think multiple tag selection is gone or something like that. But the main things that they've added are reminders, which we Windows users have been waiting for a very long time.
Yeah, that's been around for a while.
Yeah.
It's weird to hear Windows is getting it so much later.
I know.
Especially Evernote started as a Windows app.
I know, but everyone develops for like Mac and iOS now. Mm-hmm. That's just like the really annoying thing is because that's where all the hype is, I guess, for things like that.
Yeah.
It really ticks me off as a Windows user, but it is what it is. Anyway, I've downloaded it. I like it a lot. If you download it and you don't like the changes that they've made, if there are a lot of hidden features that you want, you can just go to oldapps.com and download the last version of Evernote.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's always a little handy thing you can do on Windows. And I think I think Old Apps has sections for OS X too.
Interesting.
So you might even be able to do it for the last version of Evernote for the Mac.
Huh.
But then you miss out on features like reminders. So we'll just have to deal with it for now. Anyway, that was all of the news. Apparently people are having trouble hearing Thorin in the live stream. But sorry, right. Seeing Thorin. But that's unfortunately out of our control. That's just Google Hangouts being horrible.
Email me later and I'll just send you a flipbook of pictures of Thorin.
All right.
Printable and everything.
Let's move on to our top stories. I apologize in advance because a lot of our top stories are kind of iOS related this week and not necessarily because of the iOS news coming up. It just happens to be that those were the things that did well this week. I am still using a first gen iPad. That's my little confession of the day. And it is a humongous piece of steaming crap.
I always loved how it felt and looked, though.
I like the form factor better than any other iPad or any other tablet I've ever used, and I wish that they still made them like that. But unfortunately, at this point, it's gotten to be a slow, crashy, buggy mess just because everything is made for faster devices and later versions of iOS, and so it sucks now. And so I really took it upon myself to try and speed it up this week to like last me a few more months before I buy a new one. And these are the things that I've learned. The main thing I learned is that a lot of the tweaks that on the net, if you search for like how to speed up an old iPad or iPhone, a lot of the tweaks out there are complete garbage and or completely false.
Like what?
It's amazing the myths that go around about what kind of things speed up your phone. But like, there's one, you know, the one thing that everyone does and that every article publishes is that if you just open up your multitasking drawer and close every app in there, it frees up RAM on your device, so you can use apps.
It frees up some stuff. It frees up some resources, but it's very small.
The only thing that those apps are using is RAM. If they're in that multitasking drawer, for the most part. I'll get to the exceptions in a second. And closing all of them frees up RAM, but opening another app would, you know, iOS automatically closes the apps that it doesn't need in RAM.
So yeah, you're but not then doing it's an extra operation it has to do.
Yeah.
It's minimal, but I don't think it's fair to say that it doesn't do anything.
The exception is certain apps, like VoIP apps, that are actually keeping connections open in the background. They're actually doing something in the background. Those you want to close. But opening up and just closing every app.
Or Google Maps, because it actually does keep the VoIP.
So there are
certain
apps that if you close them from the multitasking drawer, it's good. But all of them is like not going to make your device actually that much better. And it's so temporary that it, you know, that's not a good solution.
It's a very tedious solution.
Yeah, I know. And so there were a lot of things like that. And so I tried to look at some of the things that we knew would really make a noticeable difference. And one of the biggest ones is, unfortunately, don't update iOS or your apps. Because... Yeah. When you update iOS to the latest version or when you update your apps to later versions, they're designed to work on better hardware. They add more features. They add more stuff. And it much more often than they speed up the app.
Yeah, and iOS 7's slow.
Oh, yeah. Well...
So, I mean, it's not final, but it's slow.
I'm still running iOS 5 on my iPad, and let me tell you, on that hardware, it is also slow.
Yeah, you would not like what iOS... I mean, if you even can install iOS 7.
I can't even install iOS 6.
Oh, well then...
That's why I'm still on iOS 5.
You're safe.
Well, so a lot of old devices, you know, after 2 years, they stop getting support for the newer operating systems. But I would argue that you shouldn't even install the latest one that it can have. I think with iOS, a lot of the times you find that the you can only really update it once in its life cycle before it starts to really slow down. And that may not be true with certain later devices.
Yeah, but it's like Apple optimizes the...
But it was true with the 3G and the 3GS, which were horrible on iOS 4.
Yeah.
It's true with the iPad 1, which is horrible with iOS 5. The problem is you can't actually downgrade iOS.
And you
can't
could back downgrade then, iOS but it was apps. Very hard.
Back then, you definitely... I mean, yeah. Now you may still be able to if you, like, did the preparation beforehand, before you upgraded, but, you know, no one's done that.
Yeah, no one does that.
But the next time you buy one of these devices, that's something you should think about.
Yeah.
And kind of building off that, the other thing you can do is use Apple's built-in apps instead of third-party ones. You know, I like Chrome a lot better than I like Safari, but Chrome has been updating all this time, and it's got a lot more features, but that slows it down.
You know what's
Safari
funny,
is much faster.
I was using Safari on my iPad last night, and then I used Chrome on the iPad last night, and it did a much better job with, like, Chrome did way better on JavaScript performance,
well,
which
so
makes
things
no
like,
sense, but...
Yeah, things like that may or may not be true, but my problem was is that the app itself would always hang. Like, I'd press, like, close a tab or something, and
the
entire thing would just lock up.
I think you are right in, like, 99% of cases.
Yeah.
I was like, that's weird. That shouldn't happen.
And a lot of this is because, in a lot of other cases, things like the Videos app has access to certain resources that third-party video apps do not. And so it's going to be able to play videos where other, you know, like, VLC might crash. So, you know, I've kind of switched back to using the default music app, Safari, the default videos app, all of these things on my iPad, and it does work better even though they're not as good.
Yeah, and in a couple of weeks, I'll actually be talking about that whole experience. Like, if you actually did want to live in Apple's walled garden, how bad is it, and what are you going to lose, and what do you gain?
And so I thought that this would be a good prequel to that.
Yeah.
And the last thing I want to mention, really quick, and this is an obvious one that people talk about all the time, is remove jailbreak tweaks. There was a while back I was running Winterboard on it.
Don't say that to Thorin.
I know. Well, I love jailbreak tweaks too, and I was running a bunch of them. And because they just took up so many of those resources, my apps were just crashing all
the
time.
Does that mean Flux is gone?
No, Flux is the only thing I still have. Because it is a necessity to my iPad reading. Flux, for those of you that don't know, even though I've probably talked about it a ton on the show, is an app for iPad, Windows, Linux, Mac, every platform out there.
Alternatively, you could just dip your iPad in orange juice.
No, but then you'd be wasting valuable orange juice. It it changes the color temperature of your screen, not the brightness, but it turns it an orangish or red tint, which makes it less harsh on your eyes, because the blue light is what really kind of causes eye strain and, you know, causes insomnia and things like that when you're reading your screens at
night.
There's
no pain, no gain, Winston.
No pain, no gain, guys. So I love Flux, and that's the only jailbreak app I have still running. But I removed all the others, and my apps crash 50% less now than they did before. Crash a lot.
Sell it.
The thing is, unfortunately, if you know, you're going to have to update. And this is part of it is just the way technology works, but part of it is Apple a little bit. There's kind of a planned obsolescence thing there, but a lot of it too is just that it's because it's such a closed system. Mm-hmm. You can't, like, you know, on Android, you can download optimized versions of a ROM, or you can download new kernels, or you can download your, you know, have different launchers that are lightweight and tweak the tiniest weird settings in your phone that make it last longer and speed it up, even with a newer version of the OS or an older version of the OS. And you can download older versions of your apps or an older version of Android, unlike you can do on iOS. And so, you know, and you can make an Android device last a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. With iOS device, like, once you've reached that point, it basically becomes useless, unless you're using it for really, really basic stuff. But if you're using any apps from the App Store, like I use it to read newsstand apps, and they crash all the time.
Well, newsstand. Let's not even start on that.
I love newsstand so much. I'm not gonna lie. In theory,
someone has to.
I know. I think I might be the only person, but I love it.
I do like the theory. I don't like that I can't put it in a folder, but that is coming in iOS 7. So
wait,
I
seriously?
Forgive it. Yeah. I mean, I have it in a folder anyway, but I can't use it.
The thing is, now that I actually use it, I don't want it in a folder. I only wanted to put it in a folder so I could hide it when I wasn't using it.
I tried to like it, and like you said, the apps crash, and I have new hardware. They still crash. It's not you. It's not your device.
I know, but they're still better than a lot of the magazine apps you can get on other platforms.
Yeah, when they work.
And yeah. Anyway, so that was a really long-winded way of saying there are ways to do it, but they all require some pretty serious sacrifice.
Yeah.
No sacrifice, no victory.
Yeah, Apple's... I think Apple's...
Yeah, I just quoted the Transformers movie.
Oh, my. I was like, I'm sure that's for something, but I'm not going to ask. But Apple's solution just seems to be like...
Buy a new iPad.
Throw it away or give it back to us, and we'll give you $10 towards your iPad or whatever.
I'm proud that I made it last this long, but it's definitely time to upgrade.
Yeah, I've got to say that you deserve a pat on the back. I'm not going to give it to you, though.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Okay.
Well, I gotta get you mad so we can have our tickle fight.
That's weird for people who are listening right now and didn't miss the part of the show that we edited out when Dodges was fixing the audio and I was talking about how one of someone's questions were who would win in a tickle fight, Dodges or Whitson, which I'm pretty sure was just a thinly veiled comment about how apparently they think we're gay or something.
Together, though.
Right.
But what they can't see is the not gay pillow between us.
Yes, there's a force field right here that's supposed to... Yeah, anyway. Okay, Thorin.
Too many inside jokes
Why don't you tell us about turning your phone into the ultimate alarm clock for any situation?
Yeah, I can do that. So, like weather apps, there's like 9 billion alarm clock apps in both the Google Play Store and the iTunes App Store. And pretty much if you do anything, or if you, whatever type of person you are, you can find an alarm clock that'll fit, you know, your life. That would be the advertising slogan I would put on the alarm clock section of Google Play Store that exists. Anyway, so whatever type of alarm you want, you can find one. I'm a big fan of the ones that kind of wake you up slowly and nicely over time. So
me too.
For iOS, yeah, something like Wake Alarm or Rise on iOS or Android, Warmly and Timely are both do a similar thing. Or you can get ones that are horrible to you every morning where they make you shake it or make you answer puzzles or make you walk around your house, whatever you need. So those are, you know, I think whatever type of morning person you are, you can find an alarm clock that fits your needs, which is weird.
There
are
even some, yeah.
That's an ecosystem.
And there are ones that like track your sleep too, right? Mm-hmm. Did you mention
yeah,
this?
Doesn't Wake Alarm,
like,
that one?
It measures how much you toss and turn using the accelerometer of the phone.
Yeah.
And they have, yeah, with recording functions where they record when you talk in your sleep, all kinds of things.
That's weird. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know they did that now.
You know what's really weird that I've discovered? The default alarm in Android is the best alarm I've ever used. And I don't know why, but I think it's just it's the most horrible alarm I've ever heard, or maybe just because it's really loud, that every time I hear it, it immediately wakes me up. Mm. Just more so than any other alarm clock I've used. I don't know why that is.
Apparently my brain is the best alarm at this point, because every time I have this thing on my arm that wakes me up and tracks my movement.
The Fitbit?
Fitbit Flex, I think, is the one that I have. I don't know.
It's an alarm thing too.
Yeah, it tracks sleep and activity. So I just say I'm asleep now, and then it just figures out what I'm doing, and then I can check in the morning. But it also wakes me up in the morning at a certain time by buzzing.
Like when you know when your sleep cycle is at the opportune moment or whatever.
Yeah, I tell it when to do it approximately. Oh,
okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so it's nice. Except I usually wake up about 5 minutes before because my body has started to anticipate it.
That's good, though.
So, yeah.
That's even better.
It's not a bad thing. It's just I kind of want to wake up to it once because I always know it's happening. And somehow I have a very good internal alarm clock. Like, I just won't oversleep ever. But
that's good.
Yeah, but it's...
I have a lot of buzz are probably jealous of you right now.
I would I'd really like to experience it one time since I paid for it. So, I mean, it's been great for the other functions, but it's like the sleep thing is almost useless to me because it doesn't actually, it's not its fault, it's my fault, but...
For being too good of a waker-upper.
Yeah, I blame the sun a little bit. Kind of a sun thing. Sorry, Thorin, I just sidetracked you there.
Yeah, whatever, I had a very important thing to add, I'm sure.
I didn't remember what we were talking about. I was like, for a second, I forgot what we were talking about, but...
Actually, I was thinking, when I was writing this, I was thinking about, have you guys ever heard your alarm sound being used by someone in public as a ringtone and like freaked out slightly?
No.
Like, what am I supposed to be doing right now?
I made my own alarm. So to prevent that problem, because I freak out when I hear the iPhone ringtone, not the ringtone, the text tone, even though I don't use it. And whenever I hear that, I'm like, what is it? What's going on? my roommate and I just made like a short movie, and we have that tone in there, and every time it goes off in the movie, we both are like, is that my phone? And she has an Android and I don't use the tone, so I don't know why we think that, but
something's happening.
Yeah, because you hear it all the time.
Yeah, well, that's what I like about being on Android, is that I never hear my ringtone anywhere, because everyone I know has an iPhone or has like a Galaxy S3, which has different ringtones than CyanogenMod does. Like, literally no one I know uses the same tones as me, which is very nice. But making your own is a good
someday
solution.
You'll have that joy of that crate you get when that happens.
I did.
Oh, God, marimba!
Back when I had the original Droid and, like, everyone was using that phone, back when Android was really crappy, we all had the same tones, but they were all for different things. Mm-hmm. So it was very, very confusing. So I've been through it, just not anymore.
Yeah, it's traumatic. We're with you there.
Yep. Okay. So, speaking of iPhones and stuff.
This
was kind of an interesting thing. Dot just wasn't sure what he wanted to do for his top story this week. So he just decided to bring up a discussion point for something that wasn't on Lifehacker, but probably could have been, that you just wrote on your personal Kinja blog.
Yeah. I guess we should explain that. I don't know if we've ever talked about Kinja blogs on the podcast.
We might have mentioned it back when our site launched its new design called Kinja. It's now kind of a blogging platform where, you know, if you have a commenter account on Lifehacker, you can also write blog posts, and, you know, we can republish them to the Lifehacker front page, which we do a lot. Our readers have always provided some of our best content. And so you know, we just kind of thought it was a good idea to make it really easy for them to share that with us. But that's not really what this is about.
Oh, well,
the idea was that Dot just didn't think this fit on Lifehacker, apparently, and so wrote a post on his personal blog about how you think that Apple's going to get rid of the iPod Touch.
I think they're eventually going to get rid of the iPod Touch. I'd like them to do it on Tuesday, and I think that regardless of when they do it, they should do it sooner than later.
Why is that?
Well, so they've got the iPhone 5 and the 5S, I mean, which is going to be the successor to the iPhone 5, obviously. And then if you've been paying attention to the rumors or, you know, not explicitly ignored tech sites over the last month, you've heard of the cheap iPhone that's coming out that's multicolored and plastic in the back and stuff, and it's a little bit thicker, and it's basically an iPhone 5 with a bigger battery. So what I was thinking about this is it looks a lot like they're targeting the iPod Touch people. I've been thinking this for a while, that it really would make sense, and this is going to be something I think that Apple would do if they could do it more than... I think it'll be a difficulty thing with the carriers to convince carriers to do that.
Yeah.
But when you get an iPad, you can get an iPad with Wi-Fi and 3G in it, and then you can kind of sign up for a plan as you go, month by month or whatever, and there's not a contract. And the iPhone 5C could work very similarly in that it could just be the iPod Touch, and if you want service, then you could sign up for service for that temporary amount of time. That's not the carrier's favorite thing, because they want you on a contract and they want to subsidize your phone and keep you buying more and more and more from that same carrier. But in terms of getting more people on the platform, it's beneficial for Apple because no one has to commit. And if they can get the pricing down to iPod Touch level, which is $299 right now at the on the low end, and the cheap iPhone is supposed to be about $400. So that's why I'm thinking this year maybe not so much, but when the R&D costs go down and they're able to make these negotiations and it becomes a popular device, if they're able to see that it's a popular device, then they might be able to do that and combine them, because the iPod Touch lost 3 million in sales last year. It's going down. People are just not really buying iPods because they have phones, and to make it a transitional device, I think is really good, because then people might end up buying a better iPhone later, and it also gives people the opportunity to make a choice. Also, Apple could do what they did with the first generation iPhone and get a kickback on the cellular data and voice plans,
right?
Because they're not getting subsidized through the carrier.
Oh, okay.
What about like kids? I'm always kind of like, kids are the ones that buy iPod Touches, right?
But like parents could still buy the iPhone 5C for them and just not get a data plan for it.
Yeah, exactly. It can just be an iPod Touch until you buy a plan, and then when their kids are old enough or ready or whatever, then they can say, oh, now it's an iPhone.
Here's where I kind of disagree, and here are the reasons I think that this is not going to happen. A is just that I like the iPod Touch, and I hope it doesn't happen.
A lot of people feel that
way. But here are the differences. The iPhone 5C buying a 3G device cell is going to be more expensive than buying a Wi-Fi device, mm-hmm. because you have to have that 3G chip. But it's also always going to be thicker.
It's a part cost of about $12, though.
Yeah, but then why do they sell the iPad 3G for like $100 more?
Because they can.
So why wouldn't they still continue to do that?
I don't know. They may not, probably because they want more people on the iPhones and they can get a bigger kit back through the plan sales.
I also think there's something to be said for a thinner device. Mm-hmm. Because everyone just loves to make things as thin as possible.
Yeah, but the iPhone's pretty thin.
Not as thin as the iPod Touch. Have you used an iPod Touch lately?
I know, but it's like...
They're actually kind of too thin, in my opinion.
Exactly, that's the point. I don't think it matters.
I think I'm the only person that thinks that.
Well, when I got the iPhone 5 and you saw that, you thought, like, that's pretty thin.
It is pretty thin.
And so
I think that's the perfect amount of thinness.
Yeah, and that's about what we're getting with the iPod 5C is supposed to be a tiny, tiny bit thicker, but it's so negligible.
I think my opinion is different than Apple's and possibly from the majority of people, which is that thinner is somehow better, which is not true. But that is what everyone seems to think, and that's what Apple wants to keep putting out really thin devices.
I think. But I think they've gotten to a point where it's irrelevant. And they don't always go thinnest, because we've seen ultra Ultrabooks. That are thinner than the MacBook Air, but Apple doesn't go thinner. They realize, I think, there's a point where they'd rather stick more battery in there or get, you know, I mean, like, they could make the iPhone 5C thinner and the iPhone 5S thinner, but they decided to up the battery, if you believe the rumored specs, instead of making it thinner.
I actually wish they would make the iPod Touch and the iPad thicker. Because then the buttons would be easier to press. You could get more battery life out of them. There's so many more advantages than just having something that's a few millimeters thinner than the original iPad, which is stupid.
But with the iPad, I think you'll find that the if they are going with the big one to the iPad mini sort of thing, it actually is really easy to use and it's light.
All right.
So I think it'll be okay in that level of thinness, but you won't want to go what they did with the iPad 2, 3, 4, whatever. That form factor was always it was hard to push those buttons because they're at an angle. Now they're not at an angle.
I think the most compelling reason you have is that the sales have gone down that much, and that I believe they're still selling the iPod Classic, right?
Yeah.
So they still have an iPod device, and I think that in that sense, it would make sense that, you know, we still have an a device that's just for music, and if you want, you know, a touchscreen and apps, you probably at this point already have an iPhone anyway.
Yeah, and I mean, Apple has a history of cannibalizing their own products. They like to be the one that does it and not let someone else do it.
After all, you don't see very many Android iPod touches out there, if you know what I mean. Like, you don't see any non-phone Android devices.
Yeah, it's really just not a thing, and it's because they really have that market cornered at this point. And it's not like those don't exist, because I did want to get one at one point, if you recall.
I do.
And I just never did, and when HTC made one, and it turned out to be really crappy, apparently, so I just didn't get that. And then I eventually went the tablet route or whatever and found that I still prefer iOS for the music side of things. And I find Android a great platform for emulation and other, I guess, what iOS doesn't do.
Yeah. Except for that, has that app gotten pulled from the Play Store yet? The App Store that came out this week?
It got pulled this morning, yeah. Because I double checked before we started this podcast, but yeah.
There was a very cool app that was just a file manager, right? But it could open Super Nintendo ROMs.
What was it called? I have it here.
I don't remember. I wanted to get
remote
it.
Remote files. For those who are watching, this is what you could have gotten earlier.
If you can
even
see the video, because apparently the video feed doesn't work. But yeah, anyway, that was cool. But so yeah, time will tell. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
I'm skeptical.
I'm skeptical they'll do it this time. I would really like for them to do it this time because I just feel like it's a good, smart move. But there are also probably a million things I don't know as not a business person.
The carriers are going to be the biggest block to that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I'm hoping that they can make that happen over the next year, maybe 2 years. I'd prefer shorter, obviously, because I just think it's cool. But yeah, there are a lot of people who really like the iPod Touches and don't want it to change. Let me just say to that, if you really like the iPod Touches and you are satisfied with the internals, which will be the same as the 5C, by the way, pretty much, then they're just going to get cheaper.
Yeah, that's the other alternative. I would just like a cheaper iPod Touch. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
So enough of that.
Let's move on to questions, because we've talked about Apple more than I ever wanted to talk about Apple in
Just wait
till next week.
I apologize to everyone who's going to get 2 weeks of Apple crap.
You know, we probably won't end up talking about them that much next week, though, because whenever the news comes in, we're so tired of it by the time the podcast
comes around.
Yeah,
and we've already talked about iOS 7 and all that on the show before. So we're just like, hey, it's out. It's coming out next week. Let's move on.
Yeah, because I remember the last time we did it, we just kind of ran through it because we're like, ugh, we don't want to deal with this.
Yeah, I'm already sick of it, and it hasn't even happened yet.
I kind of agree.
I am excited for this KitKat news eventually, though.
That'll be interesting.
You know what I think I've heard more people say in the past 2 days, like, man, I really want a KitKat bar now.
Well, when I saw that, who posted that KitKat commercial for the Apple-centric KitKat commercial?
I actually didn't watch it, but it looked funny.
I watched it, and then at the end of it, I'm like, I want a KitKat.
It was like a fake commercial, I think, where they all had KitKats, but they were pretending like it was a phone, right?
Yeah, and it was like a Johnny Ive type person talking about the form of it. I'm like, this looks really good, and I don't really like Kit Kats that much.
I kind of love Kit Kats,
and I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'm convinced now. Fortunately, I didn't have one in the house, otherwise it would be gone.
And
now
you have a lot of candy.
Yeah, but I don't eat a lot. I like, it's mostly for visitors. It's and
I eat a lot of Dodge's candy, guys.
Yeah, you it keeps you coming over here for
it's
the
pretty
Sour
much
Patch
the
watermelon.
Only reason I come over to do the podcast is because Dodge's has a lot of candy.
Yeah, it helps. It gets people here, and that way, if we have a party, we don't really have to prepare for anything because there's just candy there.
Life hack. There you go, guys.
Yeah, and it's great for luring kids.
It's great for luring kids.
Can we get this going? I got to go buy a Kit Kat now. I don't even know where the grocery store is, but I'll find it.
All right, this first question is very simple.
Good.
Katie writes, is there any way to disable Netflix's autoplay next episode feature? So those of you who use Netflix know that they, a while ago, they added this cool feature that at the end of an episode, you'll wait for a little bit and then it'll automatically start playing the next one.
Yeah, keep your binge going. Yeah,
this leads to binge Netflixing.
Yeah.
But Katie wants to disable it. And so I did a little searching. I was surprised that there wasn't a Grease Monkey script or anything like that for this.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently, if you just call Netflix customer support and you say, I want it disabled on my account for this device or whatever, it works for, I think, a number of devices like the PS3 or the Xbox 360. Not necessarily all devices.
What about the computer?
I don't know. Mm. But if you just call them and ask them, they'll turn off autoplay for you.
Interesting. I didn't even know you could call Netflix.
Yeah, right?
I'm glad that they did that. I remember years ago, I was like, Netflix, why do you have Toy Story 1 but not Toy Story 2? And then they just...
Because one's better.
Well, yeah, but they, they're just like... We don't care about your problem, basically. Like, it was the worst customer service, and I went to Blockbuster, and then as soon as I got like 8 broken DVDs in a row, I went back to Netflix. and I, you know, I like to stir things up, I guess. But
yeah,
no, this is not a dig against Netflix in any way. But I don't remember. I was like, I'm surprised that they have that now. Good for them. Is what I'm getting.
Must have gotten
at.
Better as they've gotten more popular. Yeah. I can imagine that being the case. But anyway, yeah, you can just call them.
I called Amazon today for the first time ever.
Really.
Called who?
Never called them.
Amazon.
Oh, they're great on the phone.
Yeah, I've called Amazon too, and they were pretty fantastic.
And you should yeah, always awesome. Do that because they're not very good. I wouldn't say they're terrible on email, but like if you have a problem that's nuanced and not very specific, like hey, I paid for overnight and it got here 5 days later, because then that's an easy thing. But if you have a complicated problem of some sort, you want to call the people on the phone. Are so much better.
Yeah, that happened to me recently when I returned something, and I returned it, and then like 3 months later, they were like, "We're still waiting for the return on this item." And I was like, "Whoa, I sent that in." They're like, "Nope, cool, it was just a glitch. We're good."
Yeah,
and I called them. It was like a 5-minute phone call.
It seems to be a trend, and I guess since this is the Apple podcast now, Apple's doing that. I socially engineered my way into my roommate's iTunes account or Apple ID because. And
but like with her permission, or
yes,
just because you're a jerk?
Oh no, because she forgot her password and she's trying to fix it.
Oh,
so
okay.
I thought, oh, this would be an interesting experiment if we can get in without knowing things.
Yeah, we already know that works.
And apparently, if you know their favorite color, or you don't, which we didn't, and we just guessed several times. Bless you, Whitson.
Sorry, excuse me.
Then you can just get like Apple has not learned from the whole Matt Honan incident. Apparently, it's
yeah,
so
I thought
easy.
They had put like. Things in place to protect against that.
Apparently not.
That's sad. All right. Let's next question. And this is for you guys because I don't know.
All right.
Marianne writes, I don't know how it happened, but I have a ton of duplicate image files on my Mac. Is there an app that will find all the dupes, line them up, and delete them for me? Doing it by hand takes forever.
It does. Thorin, you got any ideas?
I think Gemini is the best option.
I agree.
I don't remember how much it costs, though.
So you were just asking Thorin to see if he agreed with you.
Yeah. I don't know either. It's usually in bundles, and so it comes out to very little. But it is a good one. I know I have like 5 licenses at this point from all the bundles. I'm trying to find the pricing online right now. There is another. There's a free one, I think, called Duplicate File Searcher. That is not. It's not like it's bad or anything, but Gemini's is really awesome. And Gemini's $10, by the way. I just found that out. Now I'm getting pop-ups up in the iTunes store or App Store.
I hate
whatever.
It when that happens.
I know.
I'm pretty sure there are Grease Monkey scripts that fix that,
there's a Chrome
too.
Plugin that stops it, and I just haven't gotten around to putting it in there.
Yeah.
They even have one for Safari.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I don't know the name off the top of my head for those who are listening and want this. You know, when you go to an iTunes page store and it tries to open iTunes for you. Mm-hmm. But there are Grease Monkey scripts and extensions that fix that. If you just Google them, you should be able to find them.
Mm-hmm.
You can also just tell it not to do that.
Can you?
Like, that's an option in Chrome. It just says automatically don't do this anymore.
Oh, right. You're right. I think a long time ago I said, yeah, it's okay if you do that because I might want to. Back in the day, I apparently thought that was a great idea.
Maybe that's an option in Firefox, too. Firefox has a whole section of things like that, but I don't see anything for, like, an iTunes app page.
Yeah, I don't know how to get back to that pop-up after it initially happens, though. So.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I don't know either. This is the problem. Anyway, we can get back on topic. So Gemini is what you guys would pick?
Yeah, I think it's worth the $10 if you got a duplicate file problem.
Are there any free ones?
Yeah, the
duplicate file searcher.
Yes, correct.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Easy. Last question. John writes, at my home desk, I usually plug my MacBook Air plug into a monitor, an external hard drive, a wireless keyboard, and a MagSafe charger, and I used it in closed clamshell mode. I've been looking for a dock to ease the process of plugging everything in and free that charger up for when I'm out or at work. I can't find any docks for the Air that don't require you to use your own charger. So, he's looking for, his first question is, are there any docks that have a charger attached?
No.
Okay. And if not, what do you say to buying an off-brand MacBook charger?
No.
Mistake? Question mark? So yes, that would be a mistake, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
It sounds like he's just looking for the cheapest way out of this. And I think that
there is not
first
a cheap
of all,
way out
I don't
of
think
it.
if there was a dock that had a charger connected, it would probably just be slightly more expensive.
Yeah.
But I think the thing is that MagSafe is a proprietary connector.
Yeah, and Apple. There used to be I think it was New Power, but I'm probably wrong. That used to do batteries with a MagSafe thing attached to them, and they would, and at first they, I think they reverse engineered it or something, mm-hmm. and then Apple said, no, you can't do that. So then they started saying, okay, well, we'll just splice the MacBook, the MagSafe charger onto the battery, and then Apple's like, no, you can't do that. And so I think you can now send in a MagSafe thing or buy one from them and then pay for the splicing.
Oh my God. But anyway,
it's not worth it. You still have to buy the charger. So what I would recommend, there are two things you can do. You can buy, Belkin has like a $300 dock, which is kind of expensive. It's a Thunderbolt dock. You just plug into the
Most
Thunderbolt.
Most docks are pretty expensive though.
Yeah. And then, so $300, it's not like crazy, especially with all the ports that it has. And then there's no integrated MagSafe cable or anything like that. But if you want to get a cheap adapter, you can go on MagSales.com, which is Otherworld Computing site. And they have refurbished and used adapters that you can get anywhere from about $30 to $60, and $60 obviously being the high end. But if they don't have one at the lower price point at the time, and the $30 ones are usually like a little scuffed up, and mm-hmm. sometimes have, you know, like maybe someone got a permanent marker on it or whatever.
If they still really care about the look of your charger.
Yeah, they still work really well. I get all my chargers that way, and then I can get two or three of them for the price of a new one.
That's awesome.
So that, yeah, it's like, they have this outlet store that is not, it's not that it isn't advertised, because they definitely push it in like email blasts or whatever, but they, it's not, like you wouldn't necessarily know it's there if you were going on their site.
Oh, okay.
So, it's in the menu. It's just kind of like the same as everything else.
It is a great site. So, I don't even like really use Macs that much anymore, but it's just a great site.
Yeah.
They have so much great stuff.
Yeah, and they
good prices.
Yeah, and when you want something...
Good quality for the price.
Yeah, when you want something that Apple doesn't do, they usually find a way to do it or provide a service if you want it done for you, like putting an SSD in an iMac or whatever.
Yeah, and it's not the cheapest, like their hard drive enclosures aren't the cheapest around, but they're
very
the best
good.
I've ever used.
Mm-hmm.
So for the price, they're good. And
yeah.
So the other thing that I would mention here, and this goes for any laptop, not just Macs, obviously, but when I was using a laptop with an external monitor and keyboard and stuff, and I had to plug in everything, I didn't want to buy a $300 dock because F that noise. So what I did is, the problem is that, you know, the cables would all fall off the desk and get tangled up and stuff, and every time I'd have to like plug them all in. What I used is I used a number of binder clips hooked to the end of my desk, and we've shown this on the site before, and I'm going to put a link in the show notes because it's very hard to describe over audio, but as soon as you see the picture, your mind just explodes because it's so awesome and genius.
And you can include magnets.
Yeah. And so you basically just have binder clips on the edge of your desk that catch the cables before they fall off, and then you basically just put your computer right next to it and plug the cables in. It's much faster than trying to do it without that, and it costs about $4 instead of $300.
Yeah. But if you're thinking like that's too cheap and the $300 dock is too cheap and you're like, I just have to spend the most money I possibly can, and I also happen to need a monitor, the Thunderbolt display that Apple sells is basically the only thing with an integrated MagSafe cable.
Oh, it has an integrated MagSafe cable and USB ports for you to plug in your keyboard.
Three USB ports, an Ethernet port, another Thunderbolt port.
So it's essentially like a dock.
It really functions as a dock.
You just have to plug in the Thunderbolt cable and you're good to go.
Yeah, the problem is that it's USB 2.0 right now, but we do have that Apple event, you might have noticed, coming up next Tuesday, this coming Tuesday. So like, wait 5 days, you might have a USB 3.0 Thunderbolt display. I don't think that this listener wants to spend $900 some on a Thunderbolt display for a dock, but it's something to know that's out there because it is really the only integrated option that I've ever seen, and I think based on Apple's previous actions probably is the only one out there.
All right,
All right.
Sweet. So okay.
We have a couple of quick live ones.
There are some good live ones. So one of them, actually, the chat room answered for themselves while they were...
Oh, that's cool.
You know, while they were doing this. Hold on. I gotta find it now. This is the problem.
Do you remember the gist?
The gist was, I believe they were looking to sync iPhoto libraries across multiple Macs.
Mm.
Okay, so again, this is another Mac question for the week. Sorry, Windows users. Ryan was asking this, and so they were saying, they found an app called iPhoto Library Manager.
Oh, that's cool.
By Fat Cat Software. that does that. So there you go. There's your answer already.
That's nice when people.
He also said, what size Mac is awesome for duplicates?
Oh, cool.
What size? So that's another option. The other question is, what would a great podcast manager be for Android? And so I have an answer for you right there. First of all, my answer would be, if you ever have a question like that, head over to the Lifehacker app directory, which you can find at lifehacker.com/apps, and you should be able to see the app directory link on that page. And it's our favorite apps in every category for basically every platform.
What do we have in there now? Dog Catcher, or did it change?
I don't remember. My favorite is not Dog Catcher. But
this one called is not Dog Catcher?
Yes, that's what it's called. No, so my favorite is Beyond Pod.
Oh, right.
I find that it's a lot easier to use than Dog Catcher. It probably doesn't have quite as many options as Dog Catcher does, but I found the Dog Catcher interface to be very confusing, and there are certain things that it does that I just can't figure out, like why it's doing certain things at any given time. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of annoys me. Beyond Pod is really great. It's very simple to use, but still has a lot of really nice advanced features as far as which podcast do you want to download and which do you want to stream, in what order do you want them all to play, and stuff like that. Dog Catcher is still our app directory pick, apparently.
I have one that
I'll ask Alan about that, because I think he's in charge of that now. I don't know if he's tried them both and still likes Dog Catcher better.
There's one that reminded me of Downcast that I used to use on Android, and really? I cannot remember what it was called.
That's a bummer.
So, you're welcome, listeners.
You're welcome. I'm going to drink hell. Anyway, I love Beyond Pod. I highly recommend it.
I'm going to figure out what this is.
Okay, so Dasha's just going to start searching Google. In the meantime, we're going to jump to our tips and downloads of the week, and Thorin is going to kick us off.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
I am. Oh, I am, aren't I?
Yes, you are.
My tip of the week is to... it's actually a couple services. I mentioned a service called Just Delete Me, which is all about showing or giving you links to different services, account deletion pages. And we've also talked about another one in the past called Account Killer that does the same thing.
So the idea is if you want to delete like your Facebook account, your Twitter account, and your like MySpace account all at the same time, this website just has instructions for all of those different services.
Yep, instructions and links, so you can get to it. And it also, the nice thing that Just Delete Me does that Account Killer doesn't do is that there's a Chrome extension that gives you a little color-coded thing in the URL bar, so when you're signing up for a new service, you'll know how hard it is to delete your account in the future.
Ooh, that's great, very cool.
Trying stuff out.
I actually did look at this when you posted it. I was trying to. I was like, this sounds great. I'm like, no, I read this because I remember looking, and there's Gawker and Lifehacker and everybody. It's like impossible.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. There's not a good deletion method on our sites at the moment.
Yeah, and that was like the first thing in the discussions. Of course. I'm like, oh shoot, I was hoping I got to that.
yeah, and so Just Delete Me was kind of all over. You know, everyone was talking about it a week or two ago, and I originally didn't mention it because Account Killer has instructions for many, many more services. It's a much bigger database than Just Delete Me is. So that's handy to look at for that. But the nice thing about Just Delete Me is, like you said, it has a little bit of extra, it has the Chrome extension, but it's also much nicer looking. It's a little bit, I think, easier to browse as far as that kind of stuff goes. But That's pretty handy. And so, Thorne, you also wrote, this is kind of a follow-up tip, because someone in that, in the comments of that post asked, okay, so what if I have accounts at all of these sites that I don't remember? Like, I don't remember what sites I signed up for back in, you know, 2000. Is there a service that tells me everything that I've signed up for in the past? And there is.
There's a service called Noem where you can input your account username. So assuming you always use the same username, you'll search a bunch of different sites at once and you can find it that way.
And it was originally designed
the same username. Who knows?
It was originally designed to be like, is your username available on these sites?
Right.
But it's kind of like a, you know, especially if your username is something unique enough, if you just search for it, it'll tell you what sites it's already being used on. You'll be like, oh yeah, I did have a Zanga account back in 2006. And then, you know, you can then go to Just Delete Me or Account Killer and figure out how to delete it. I think that was all I wanted to mention on that. I just thought that was a really interesting kind of workaround. And it's called Knowem, as in know them. I know them.
Yes.
Knowem. The names of these services are very confusing. Are you still searching for that podcast manager?
Yes, because Google Play won't load my app, so I can't look at what I downloaded, and I know I'll recognize it when I see it. Continue on. I will have this information, or it will remain a mystery forever. I'm not sure.
So my tip was actually this really cool little kind of infographic sort of thing that Milani posted about how long you should nap for the biggest brain benefits. And Ooh. So it's like, you know, if you nap for 10 or 20 minutes, it's like a perfect power nap for just like a quick boost in energy during the day.
But one of those yesterday.
Yeah. But if you go just a little bit longer to 30 minutes, you're going to be really groggy when you wake up and stuff like that, which I think we all know a lot about. And then 90 minutes is like a full stage of sleep. So that's like if you need something a little bit more intense than
that's
the power nap.
That's really interesting.
I know, isn't it? And so that's kind of, there really is a science to napping. And there was a 60-minute one too that was best, that was apparently best for improvement in remembering facts, faces, and names. And that was, I guess, an interesting fact. But yeah, so the real thing I took away from this is don't nap for 30 minutes, do nap for 10 to 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So there's that. But it's a really cool little, it was from the Wall Street Journal. It's a really cool little graphic and information on napping. So we'll put a link to it in the show notes.
Cool.
What was the podcast manager, Dachis?
Oh, we'll get to that in downloads. I want to keep the suspense going. Get people
okay.
to listen to the end when maybe something weird will happen. I have nothing planned. It's just that seems to be the
you don't
thing.
Need to plan it.
Yeah.
Unless you put up a wallpaper pack on the site that has
Earth Porn.
Earth Porn that has all suggestive names for all the wallpapers. That happened this week.
That was the highlight of my week.
If you haven't seen Wallpaper Wednesday this week, guys, go look it up. lifehacker.com/wallpaper Wednesday. You won't be disappointed.
The last one's the best.
The last one is the best.
Okay.
I can't believe I let you do that.
Yeah. Well, you had. How could you not?
It was too good. All right.
So my tip is not really a tip so much as it's a project. And because we're doing these video tips every week on Thursdays, and I had a tip. But I guess that's kind of a project, too. It was a no-kill mouse trap. But I just thought this was so interesting, and it was also designed by an 11-year-old girl. So I was like, no, we have to talk about this one. It is basically an automatic water bowl filler for a dog or a cat. And it's really smart because you take you take a big soda bottle of whatever size you want, and you fill it up with water and you put the cap on. And then you attach it to, you have to make like an L-shaped wood platform, and you can just glue the bottle on there because it's not that heavy even with the water in it. And then you put it, you align the bottle so it's about halfway into the bowl. So the cap goes, so the where the spout of the water bottle, I don't know what you'd call it, mm-hmm. goes halfway into the bowl. And then you unscrew the cap and it fills up the bottle. But as soon as it fills up the bowl. So as soon as the water level in the bowl reaches above the spout or where the cap was, then water stops coming out because it's submerged.
Interesting.
So then when the dog or cat drinks the water and it's not submerged anymore, then it just lets more water in until the bottle's empty. So it's super easy. It requires because we've posted these things before and they always require some sort of like Arduino interaction and I always thought like, that's not Subaru worth it.
And like Subaru and duct tape and like Linux distributions.
Yeah, it's like that's a lot of work to do to have your dog always have water. So I just thought this was so clever, and it just really shows, you know, you don't like the 11-year-old girl came up with this with some help from her dad and wanted to post it online. And I thought that was such a nice story, but it's also like, yeah, kids don't overthink things.
We really should use 11-year-old girls more for our hacks because they don't automatically gravitate towards like, I can write some code with an Arduino or a Raspberry Pi, and this will be awesome, and I can control it from my phone.
Yeah,
as if that matters.
And it is. It's like
my dog can text me when he's thirsty.
It's totally awesome, but it's also like, it's one of those life hacks that's like, stops being a life hack and starts just being like, I just did something cool.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I just thought that was awesome, and we had to talk about it. So that's my tip.
All right, Thorin, why don't you start us with your download?
Oh yeah, this is actually a couple of weeks old, but whatever. It's an app called Editorial for iPad, and it's kind of just this insanely powerful text editor that you can use as a boring old text editor, or as a markdown editor, or it's got these crazy like OS X style automator functions built into it that you can build your own scripts that happen and things happen when you type stuff.
Like,
amazing.
Like what? What are you automating exactly?
I haven't actually dug that into like the automation functions because I just got like overwhelmed with just everything else you can do with it. But Mac Stories has like a gigantic like 8,000 word review/feature on how to use it and the different things you can do with it. And I mean, you can also just do scripts like, okay, I typed this thing, send it over to Evernote or send it over to whatever. So you can do like callback URLs between apps and stuff. Like that's like the simplest thing you can do.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah,
sounds good. All right, my download is also an old download. It's a much older download.
We're gonna have all old downloads today.
Mine's really old though. Mine is called Display Fusion, and we may or may not have talked about it on the show, but it's been around for years. And it is an app for people who have multiple monitors, as many of us do. This is for Windows. And it essentially gives you a ton of new features for managing multiple monitors, like being able to switch windows from one monitor to another with a keyboard shortcut or with a click of a button. You know, its big feature used to be that it would give you a taskbar on both monitors, which is now built into Windows 8. But, you know, if you still have Windows 7, that's a useful feature. There's a free version, which is just okay, but the pro version is where it really shines, and the pro version is usually $25. But this week, they updated Display Fusion Pro to version 5.1 with a number of new features, like monitor splitting, where you can create smaller virtual monitors out of your big monitors.
I used to use this at work.
Oh, seriously?
I didn't recognize the name, but yeah, back in 2007, I used this at work. And as soon as I saw that screenshot.
Yeah, and there's like they added a bunch of new mouse control features. So now if you like bring your mouse to the far edge of your screen, it'll show up on the other monitor, which is, I don't know, kind of cool and stuff. It adds a feature where you can scroll over a window if you haven't clicked on it. You just need to hover over that window and scroll. And so there are apps already like Cat Mouse that does that, but that's built in, which is nice. So anyway, it updated to 5.1 and it's on sale for 25% off, which means it's only $18.75. That's not the lowest we've ever seen it at. It's on Steam and some like during the Steam summer sale, it was on sale for like $8 or something. Mm-hmm. So if you're willing to wait for it, that might be worth adding to your Steam wish list if you're a gamer.
Especially because you can get a good free version and then you can
upgrade when the time comes. I found that I had apparently bought it years ago, used it for a while, and then stopped. Mm-hmm. And I just searched my Gmail and I was like, oh, I already have a license. I was this close to buying it.
I always do that now because I usually pick up something in a bundle and I don't care about the app. And then I found out, oh,
this is
sounds
good
familiar.
App.
I wonder if I have that. I may have bought Display Fusion too. I don't remember.
It's a really good app if you have multiple monitors. It's good for managing your wallpaper among different monitors. You know, if you want different ones to show up on each monitor and stuff like that. So if you have multiple monitors, it's indispensable. And it's 25% off. So
sweet.
There you go.
Cool. Okay, so I've got two downloads, I guess, since we're talking about the podcast manager. I'll start with that. These are both old downloads, too. First of all, we'll start with the podcast manager.
Android, right?
For Android. So we're not totally iOSing it up today.
Yay!
That always sounds dirty to me every time I say that.
That's weird. Okay.
iOSing. I don't know what it is. Anyway, Pocket Cast is the name of it.
Pocket Casts.
Pocket Casts.
I don't think I've used that one.
I told you about it briefly. I don't think you'd really love it because you and I have different playback, I guess, priorities.
Yeah.
and all of that, but it's a very simple podcast app. It is by no means perfect or the most feature-rich, but it has a nice, simple design. It kind of looks like Downcast, and it does most of what most people would want.
A lot of the Android podcast managers could stand to be simpler and easier to use, which is kind of one of the downsides of a lot of them. So that's nice that there's an alternative for those of us that don't need all those features.
Yeah, all I care is that if I can use a password-protected feed and like it updates itself. And
cool.
That's pretty much the, and you can set like different number amounts. But anyway, we'll move on from that because we don't need to talk about it too long because we have an actual download. It's called Wonderful Day, and I talked about it on the podcast and posted about it a while ago.
I was going to say, this does sound familiar.
It was about a year ago.
Really?
We've
been doing
like
the podcast for a year.
We've been doing it for longer than a year in different forms, but.
Oh, that's crazy.
Well, I mean, if you look at the number of episodes we have, we're on, I think, 69. today, so
well that's interesting. That is longer than a year.
Yep, and I think we're also behind on the count because I've screwed it up a couple of times. So we're definitely beyond 52 weeks.
All right, cool.
So the A Wonderful Day. We've talked about this a lot, but I'll give a quick explanation. It's based on the Seinfeld productivity secret, also known as "Don't Break the Chain." I almost forgot. And I used to do this all the time to develop new habits because what you do is you put a calendar on the wall. You say, I want to exercise 3 days a week or 7 days a week or whatever. You probably should probably take a break if you're exercising 7 days a week. But but you'd put, you know, physical activity 7 days a week. I need to do the laundry or do a chore at least once every day. And you put a check mark or a gold star or whatever you feel like doing on that calendar day when you accomplish that task. And so once you've done that, you create this chain of stars, blah, blah, blah. I like to do it with a physical calendar. I think it's the best way to start there because it's in your face all the time. But once you get better at it, I mean, eventually you don't even need it that much. But
you become very motivated to not break that chain.
Yeah,
and it becomes
exactly.
a habit.
Yeah, and so Jerry Seinfeld would kind of popularize this idea. Wonderful Day is an app that makes it easier to do it on your phone. So you don't have to, you don't necessarily have to use the calendar. So once you've, I guess, not upgraded, graduated from the paper calendar mode and you want to put it on your phone and you don't need to see it in your face all the time, you can get Wonderful Day and it has a similar function. Now, they came out with a new version, that's why I'm mentioning it. And they have, you can actually compete with yourself to try to get awards of like, oh, I did, you know, I had the longest chain here, I did the most here. They also added vacation mode so you can take a break if you need to, which was, I think, my only criticism when it came out initially. All right. So I was happy to see that. And they added some other features. It's definitely worth a look if you're on iOS. It's a well-designed app, it works really well, and they've got a lot of cool stuff that they added to it. So check that out if you want to do the Seinfeld productivity secret on your phone.
Cool. Thanks.
Wonderful Day.
Wonderful Day is the name of the app. All right. That is it for us today, you guys. Thank you so much for listening. I want to mention this again because I mentioned it last time because you reminded me. A lot of you have been, especially on the YouTube comments during the podcast, have been asking when we're going to bring back the Life Hacker show and all this stuff, or when we're going to be doing more videos that aren't this podcast. And the answer is we already are. The Life Hacker show in its original form isn't coming back just because that format was a little bit difficult for us. But we are doing more videos every week now, Dotchess and I. After we do the podcast, we film a bunch of videos here and have been putting out, you know, two a week, or are trying to put out two a week in a more like bite size.
It's only because you forgot to post it.
It's only because I forgot to post it last week. Just in smaller kind of bite size formats, so instead of a 10-minute show, you get like a 2-minute tip or little 2-minute how-to, which is kind of easier to watch so you don't have to sit down there and watch something for 10 minutes. So the videos are back. We're doing more of them. I promise. Keep an eye on the YouTube channel for more. We'll have this podcast going at the same time as we're doing those other videos. So hopefully we'll make everybody happy, including us. And we won't be too stressed out about it. We're about to go film like 4 videos right now, seriously.
Yep. I got a few in the bank for tomorrow, too.
Awesome. And to find our videos, you can always just go also to lifehacker.com/lifehackervideo. But you can also always just go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/lifehacker, and see all of the videos we've ever done there. So that's another way to do that.
I think what are we up to, like 600 now or something?
Seriously?
I think so.
That's crazy.
The year that I came on, like my main thing was to do video.
I know.
And so I pushed
really
hard.
We had like 10
that.
At that time, right?
I know. I made sure that we did one every day day of the year that year. So I know we have a pretty good library now.
Wow. Okay.
So,
Well, if you haven't watched all of our old videos, you can go back through the YouTube archives and watch those as well. But we'll have a bunch of new ones coming up for you. So, we're done. Really quick. If you like the show, please rate us on iTunes. Leave a review. We love that. We love you when you do it. And it really helps us out when other people are looking for shows to watch or listen to on their podcasts. You can also hit us up with questions for the show, constructive criticism, things like that on our social media accounts. You can find all of our accounts at lifehacker.com/about. You can also follow the site as we're posting these articles throughout the week on Twitter at lifehacker, at Facebook at facebook.com/lifehacker, and on Google Plus at google.com/pluslifehacker. You can find the show notes for this episode in the description of the podcast, and you can find the show notes for this and every other episode at lifehacker.com/the show. The show notes go up every Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific time. And because a lot of people are asking every week, we do the live stream. I guess we never really talked about this. We do the live stream on Thursdays at around 1 p.m. Pacific time.
Usually
between 1 and 1:30 is when we start. So if you do want to watch the live stream that you keep hearing about but you never know what it's on, that's when it's on. 1 to 1:30 p.m. Pacific time. And you can always view the video and the show notes post or just on the YouTube channel as well. So that is it for us this week. Thank you for listening. We will see you guys next time.
If you'd like to ask us a question, send an email to tips+asklhshow@lifehacker.com or give us a call at 347-687-8109. Keep your questions as short as you can so we can keep the show moving right along. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.